Drew Hayden Taylor's latest book is Furious Observations of a Blue-Eyed Ojibwe. Funny, You Don't Look Like One, 4. Published 2 weeks ago, this is the fourth volume of short stories and articles by this prolific playwright and author. Drew Hayden Taylor is an Ojibwe from the Curve Lake Reserve in Ontario. His plays have been produced throughout Canada and published as books. Some of his other titles include Toronto at Dreamer's Rock and The Baby Blues. Drew is also one of the organizers for the Aboriginal area at this year's Eden Mills Writers Festival. Wanting to speak to Drew about his own experiences as a writer and to hear about the Aboriginal writers coming to Eden Mills this weekend, I spoke with Drew by phone late last week.
I was doing some research in preparation for this interview, and I was reading both academic texts as well as your plays yesterday.
Ooh, you're a busy girl.
And it gave me a lot to think about.
Okay.
And one of the things that came up somewhat in your writing and somewhat in the writing of other people writing about your writing, which is always kind of a tricky thing, I think, was the fact that you're a writer that writes for both Native and non-Native audiences, and
yeah.
about the experience of the First Nations peoples and the impact of 500 years of cultural genocide, and how that gets lived out, or, you know, surviving with humor, and a whole bunch of different things were being talked about. And that role as writer, as interpreter, storyteller, as interpreter, I just wanted to ask you, what do you like about that role? Do you feel that role fits you, or what do you dislike, or how has that role changed for you?
No, that's a good question. When I sit down to write something, I don't have an agenda. I'm not an agenda writer. I let the story tell itself, both in terms of content and style. Being very pragmatic, I used to be the artistic director of another theater company called Native Earth Performing Arts in downtown Toronto, and the mandate used to be to develop and produce Native plays, which were basically by Native writers about Native people.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that kind of mandate, it makes it sound like we were primarily a theater company that catered specifically to the Native community. However, in Toronto, there is approximately 70,000 Native people, of which those 70,000, a scant few hundred might go to see plays.
Right.
And keeping that in mind, it's very unlikely a theater company could survive on that amount of box office. So, being realistically speaking, I'd say 80% of our box office were non-Native writers.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just, it's a part of the realism, and I'm also a firm believer that true humor and true drama are universal. You know, that we don't reinvent the wheel, or as I like to say, that we don't. There's no particularly Native way to boil an egg.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're doing a drama that touches emotions, or doing a comedy that, you know, tickles the funny bone, it much like Shakespeare, who wrote 400 years ago, the humor should be universal, so it opens the doors to a broader audience. So that's true when I write. I'm half Native and half white, but I was raised in a completely Native environment. However, I acknowledge the fact that the dominant culture of television, radio, etc., has sort of made us very aware of the dominant culture. So when I sit down and write, I'm in many ways unconscious of how I write.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And have you, in your experiences working with the Native Earth playwrights?
Performing Arts.
Performing Arts. I knew it was a Performing Arts. And in some ways, artist director, as administrator, and then also as writer, how have you seen audiences change in what they're listening to, or have you seen audiences change in the last 15 years?
Well, I was very fortunate to get involved in Native theater in 1988, just a couple years after Native theater caught fire and took Toronto and the Canadian theatrical community by storm, just 2 years after The Rez Sisters by Thompson
yep.
Highway premiered.
Mm-hmm.
So I was lucky enough to have been at a ringside seat when I was playwright in residence during the very first production of Dry Lips How to Move to Kappa's Casing.
Yep.
Between being a playwright in residence and artistic director, I have seen I've seen the growth and development of Native theatre in Canada, and has been very excited by the process. So, what if you're asking me what I've seen or has it changed much in the last 15 years, I'll just say it's grown immensely and become immensely popular, successful.
Mm-hmm.
Where it used to be, Native Earth was the only theatre company practically in Canada that was developing and producing Native plays. Now there's about half a dozen other Native theatre companies spread across Canada. And more interestingly, almost most of the major theatre companies, non-Native theatre companies, now develop and produce Native plays.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that it isn't the Native
right.
Theatre company producing the Native. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
And what kind of challenges do you see for both theatre in Canada and the Native voice within theatre in Canada in the next 15 years?
Well, I think it has to continue to grow. I mean, you know, theatre in Canada in general is only about, less than 50 years old, maybe 40
mm-hmm.
years old, if that. And so Canadian theatre is still defining its voice. And so Native theatre, which is only about 15 years old, is going through that same process of continuing to clarify and find and embrace its own voice and find out what stories are worth telling and
mm-hmm.
what forms to embrace and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, it used to be in the early years of Native theatre, it was what we were primarily doing what are called survival stories. You know, when an oppressed people get their voice back, they will write about being oppressed.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're beginning to sort of explore different stories to tell, different ways of different ways of telling them, and different genres of theater too, not just the angry plays, but now we're doing comedies, musicals, one person shows, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. The one of the things that struck me in reflecting back on the first 15 years of your career was that you the name Larry Lewis came up.
Yes.
As far as being a mentor and challenge you, and there was a somewhere I saw written that you wrote 6 plays in 2 years.
Yes, I was practically the in-house playwright for Dabajamajig during those years. That's where I learned my craft. Like, I've never been to university, I've never taken a playwriting course in my life. I just woke up one morning and was shocked to discover I was a playwright.
That's so crazy.
And so what happened was Larry Lewis had taken over as artistic director of Native Earth, Dabajamajig, and he basically kept hiring me to write plays and write more plays and write more plays. And so I didn't have a strict education in the world of theater. I had more of a mentorship, which allowed me to do more hands-on practical learning and writing.
And do you see that mentorship or the apprenticeship? I find that really interesting as far as a way of learning.
Oh, I mean, as I said, it was hands-on, but he was a very brutal dramaturge. I used to call him the Joseph Mengele of dramaturgy. But obviously it was successful. My very first produced play won me the Floyd S. Chalmers Award, which consisted of a plaque and a check for $10,000, which I almost lost in a bar that night, but that's another story.
And that was Toronto at Dreamers Rock.
That's correct.
Toronto at dreamersrock.com.
Yes.
The book that I was reading, it's not published yet. Has it been published since?
No, it has not.
And what I found interesting about what was written about it, I haven't seen it, so I don't know a lot about it, is that it picks up 20 years after where Toronto at Dreamers Rock left off.
That's correct.
And that it's not a bright, cheery-eyed, Rusty is just getting out of the detox center.
That's right.
And, he was, you know, according to the first play, we were thinking that he was going to go on to be the Grand Chief and put that article in the can for Michael to find.
Right.
So it's not that so I was getting the sense that, you know, you're revisiting those ideas of where the future is at, and it's that we still need to be vigilant and that these characters still have work that they're coming to terms with, or ideas, or they're still struggling.
There's many turns in the road and the destination of life is what I was saying.
And what brought you to write that sort of sequel to Toronto Dreamers Rock?
Well, I'm a firm believer that I'm not ever sure that a story is finished being told.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was doing that, I thought, well, it's just your basic standard writer question. Gee, I wonder whatever happened to so-and-so.
Yeah.
And so I would sit down, I would think, you know, whatever happened to Rusty? Did he become what he said he was going to become and all that sort of stuff? And it was, I wanted to do it on the 10th anniversary of the original Toronto Dreamers Rock. So it was sort of a salute to the Bajamajig, to Larry, to my first play, and just see where it would go. Plus the fact, I think the title called out for it.
Yeah.
I love the .com. You know, back in 89 when I was writing it, the internet was practically unknown. And then, you know, to have a play called Toronto Dreamers Rock, I was just seeing the title one day and just occurred to me .com right afterwards.
Yeah. No, it totally caught my eye as far as an interesting to sort of revisit ideas. I think before I asked you that question, it was partly that idea of apprenticeship and mentorship that I wanted to ask questions at. How do you see other young writers being mentored, other writers, both native and non-native, right now?
I don't see that happening much, I'm afraid to say. I don't know of it other happening anywhere. There used to be a playwright, not just a playwright in residency program, but a recommender program where theater companies could support, promote, and endorse native writers with small bits of money or larger bits of money, depending on the needs.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see that happening much anymore.
And do you know why that disappeared?
I think it's funding again.
Cuts.
You know, funding is down in the arts. Period.
Yeah,
that probably has something to do with it. Other than that, I wouldn't hazard a guess.
Yeah. And so despite that lack of support, are you seeing, how are the young writers doing?
Well, I think we're in terms of native theater, we're catching our second wind. I mean, our third wind, in fact. You know, we had the first glut of native writers, and then Ian Ross won Governor General's for Farewell, and now we've got some new blood coming up like Daryl Dennis, Marie Clements, all these other writers coming up that have interesting things to say and are getting out there and doing it, and us old fogies have to go and try and keep up as best we can.
Yeah, and that keeping up or that continuing to have ideas, how tapped or untapped do you feel at this point in your writing career?
I still have lots of good stories to tell. I mean, I write about 1 to 2 plays a year,
mm-hmm.
and I think up about like 3 to 4 original ideas pop into my head on a semi-regular basis a year. So it's like I haven't run out of ideas. And plus the fact that I also work in other genres too. I have a column in 6 papers. I write television. I write short stories. A whole bunch of different things. So it's like I'm.
You're busy.
I could say I'm married to theater, but I have many mistresses.
Oh, that's, I like that. I was reading somewhere too that you're working on a documentary on Native erotica.
I've been researching it for about 2-3 years now. I'm not sure what its status is with the National Film Board. The ball is in their court, and I'm just sitting by the phone waiting for them to call.
It's a huge waiting game, isn't it? It's a creative production.
Yes, very much so.
You know. And I always find it interesting because it always seems like, oh, the latest work from, and it feels like it was just written, but often it the incubation period for theater, film, whatever, takes years.
Yes, takes completely.
Years. Maybe we can switch directions. My understanding, but I don't have this on record, that I just feel like it's been rattling my brain, is that you were one of the organizers for the Aboriginal Writers at the Eden Mills Writers Festival. Is that true?
I am this year. I'm the organizer for the Aboriginal area.
Mm-hmm.
This is my first year doing it. Last year there was a bit of confusion when it was being put together last year. Nobody really knew what was going on, and I was shocked to discover I was on the publicity and I hadn't been asked yet, and somebody saw the website and mentioned it to me, and I go, oh, that's interesting, I don't know anything about it. And so when I was there last year, one of the organizers came up to me and said, would you be interested in being responsible for the Aboriginal area? And I went, sure, no problem.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of been my responsibility, and it hasn't been that difficult. I know most of the native writers in North America, and it was actually took me about 2 afternoons to program.
And so can you speak of your choices or why you've asked, and maybe we'll just run off the list right now, of there's some pretty fantastic writers that. So there's Joseph Bruchac.
Yes, who's an Abenaki from upstate New York, and he is a very he's a very well published writer. He has like I think almost 40 books published, ranging from short stories to children's books to nonfiction books. He's very well rounded, shall we say, and he's always a good addition to any group of writers because he has so many areas of expertise.
I actually have a book of his that I bought when I was probably about 15.
Uh-huh.
And so I was like, I know this person. This is great.
Kateri Akwenzi Dam is a poet, mm-hmm. a spoken word artist, and a publisher, too. She just recently published a book on Native erotica, of writings on Native erotica, and has several other books out, and she's... She's a very fascinating writer-performer. And Kateri and I are old friends who go back many years.
I saw that book recently about Native erotica. It's a beautiful book.
Mm-hmm.
It's just beautiful. And the Six Nation writers, Yvonne Beaver, Lori Gallant, Stephanie J. Stiers, and Ellen Van Every.
Yes.
Now they're fairly local to this area.
Yes, they're from Six Nations near Brantford, and one of the things the Eden Mills tries to do is try to promote local writers as well as bring in more established national writers. So we all feel it's part of the obligation to support local writers. So I took the liberty of inviting them.
I think in past years there's a writers group, Plume Writers Circle, in this area. So it's interesting to see another writers group also that act of coming together to write as a group or to support that experience. I find that really interesting.
Definitely.
And I find it interesting too because often that image of the lone writer sitting in his attic, you know, writing away his masterpiece is a very lonely image.
Been there, done it. We can be loners, solitary writers, or we can be very gregarious.
Yeah.
And I mean, the great thing about Eden Mills is his chance to come out and party.
Yeah, no doubt. And then you're going to be reading as well.
Yes.
And do you know what you're going to be reading from?
Well, I just had my 14th book published like a little over a week ago.
Congratulations.
Called Funny You Don't Look Like One, number 4.
Yeah.
And it's a collection of humorous articles and essays about being Native in Canada.
Eden Robinson is also coming to speak. And in her biography, she's touted as a, international recognition, and she's sort of that hot and up-and-coming writer.
Is she still hot and up-and-coming?
Well...
Isn't she more established now?
I don't know. Whereabouts is she from?
Oh, she's from she's from the Haisla Nation in along the coast of British Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taken her the whole day to get out here because she has to... she has to take a small plane to Vancouver, then Vancouver to here. But I mean, she's very well known. Her books, Trap Lines and Monkey mm-hmm. Beach, are very, very popular, and she's a very well known writer.
And how long have you known her for?
Actually, her I've never met. I just know of her work.
Right. This will be a chance to meet her.
Yes, definitely. I'm looking forward to it. She's well known as a giggler.
Really?
Yes. Anytime you see her interviewed, she giggles.
That's good.
And yet her writing is so dark, so it's interesting.
And Simon Ortiz?
Ortiz. He's from Arizona, a place called Sky City, a small pueblo. And he's currently a professor in residence at the University of Toronto here. He's, as I said, pueblo, and... he has written several books of poetry and nonfiction, and he's a very well-known published academic.
Yes, yeah, he's published a lot. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's incredible. As far as we've been talking for almost half an hour now, Drew, I can't believe how the time goes. One of the things I was hoping to do is on the Wednesday before the festival, is to read some of the work from these writers. Is there any poem or piece that you think I should track down and read for the audience?
Of their work?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. No, I'll leave it up to your immaculate taste.
Oh, thank you. Okay. That's good. All right. Well, I just thanks very much for making the time.
No problem.
And patience today. And
you got it.
Okay, thanks.
Sturgeon by Katerai Akwenzi Dam. I twist and gasp, open and close my mouth, whenever a sturgeon is caught in the rainy river. I know the feel of strange hands touching my body, the struggle to be free, the longing to go where I want to go. I feel the impact of stick or rock on bone, the splash of color, then the emptiness that is my head. My head like a midnight sky if the stars and moon were captured by another heaven. I know, even when I am awake again, sitting at the kitchen table, staring at my plate with its bramble design and roughed, chipped edges. I know. That is why I do not eat sturgeon. Because I know. When a sturgeon is caught in the rainy river, I am a sturgeon, and I dangle on hooks.
The Aboriginal Area begins at 1:30 p.m. this Sunday, September 12th at the Eden Mills Writers' Festival. For more information, check out their website, www.edenmillswritersfestival.ca. For CFRU, this is Anne Dolman.